special meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission for the 15th of December 2020. Welcome, everyone. I'm going to start by turning it over to Nate Pamplin to kind of get the ball rolling here, and we'll get going. Thank you.
Great. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, and Deputy Director Windrup. My name is Nate Pamplin. I'm the Director of Budget and Government Affairs, and I've been working with Dr. Julie Watson to prepare the commercial whale launch rule package that's been on the here this month. Thought we'd start this afternoon with Julie providing a pretty quick overview of the rule package through some of the items that were kind of non-controversial that are just kind of setting up the licensing framework, spending a little bit of time orienting the commission to some of the rules for viewing of southern resident killer whales, and then really using the bulk of the meeting for the commission to be able to deliberate on option A or option B. And what the deputy director, Dr. Watson, and I are going to be looking for is what are some of those themes that we can include and possible motion language to include on your summary sheet or plan decision at your Friday, December 18th meeting. This special session was called because at the December 4th briefing and public hearing, it ended up being a 3-hour agenda item with 2 hours of public comment. So there really wasn't a lot of time for the commissioners to be able to interact and digest and ask follow-up questions of staff. So thank you for convening this meeting. I know you guys have had a very busy month already, and thank you for adding another item on a very busy monthly calendar here. So I'll turn it over to Dr. Watson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, Commissioners, Nate and Amy. My plan is to do a quick overview, just to reorient you to what we're talking about here, and then really, like Nate said, open it up for discussion and answering your questions and to help facilitate that discussion. So our purpose here is to the commission to have that discussion and really to dive in on what you would like these final rules to look like, with the objective, as Nate mentioned, of providing guidance to Nate and I on what you'd like us to write up as potential motion language for your meeting on Friday. Our agenda, I'm going to quickly go over the need for the proposed rules and the considerations again, but it's going to be a very short abbreviated version of that. A little bit more of a digest on the public comments received now that we've finished the public comment period. So last time I presented on partial comments received through November 28th, and the report you have now goes through the full public comment period. So we'll talk about that briefly. Then we'll loop back to the rule elements in both options A and B for you guys to discuss as needed, but then we're hoping you can really dig in on options A and B and the differences, the feedback we received there, and what direction you might like to go. Reorienting you to the process again, this has been going on for a long time, over a year. We're having this special session today with hopefully a decision on Friday. And then in January, we're hoping to start implementation. We might need some e-rules to provide coverage because we have the statutory deadline of adopting rules by January 1. And then we'll have a little period before the rules go into effect. So we'll be doing a lot of follow-up work after your decision, hopefully on Friday, to make everything go smoothly and get it all under implementation. So reorientation to the rule from the bill, which was converted, of course, to RCW, we have this new section that tells the department we must adopt rules for holders of a commercial whale watching license regarding the viewing of southern resident orca whales. And I really want to draw your attention to the centerpiece here. The rules must be designed to do two things, and we're hoping in your discussion you'll hold these two things in your mind at all times. So we need to reduce the daily and cumulative impacts on southern resident orcas, and we need to consider the economic viability of license holders. And we have hopefully a lot of materials to support you in keeping those considerations in mind. The legislation also gave us several types of restrictions to consider, And they specifically called out things like limiting the number of boats that can be around southern residents at a time, limiting days and hours of commercial whale watching operations or operations around SRKW is what the direction we took that in the rules, geographic restrictions and time spent around the whales. So those are the elements that ended up in the rules, and they were specifically called out for the department to consider. This is just to remind you, we really tried to optimize meeting that central core mission of using best available science, reducing daily and cumulative impacts, considering economic viability. Within that, we're really trying to make sure that the rules, we can enforce them and we can adaptively manage them. That's going to be an important piece. We report back every 2 years to the legislature on these rules and can recommend changes. So we really want something that we can measure the effectiveness of and update as needed. And at the broader level, we know this is happening within a broader context of SRKW recovery, and we're trying to make sure we're thinking about that as well. So I wanted to pause just a little bit to go into the conservation need, why we're making these rules. You heard from several commenters at your meeting on Friday the 4th that commercial whale watching makes up 0.6% of noise. That's ambient noise in the Salish Sea, and that isn't the same as what's experienced by whales. So we wanted to draw your attention, though, to there's many other programs that are currently working on addressing those other sources, potential sources of noise and disturbance. So you've got the Governor's Maritime Blue Initiative, a quiet sound program that's getting up and running there to work on several of these issues. Washington State Ferries producing a ferry electric transition. The Be Whale Wise Guidelines and Public Education Program that goes with Soundwatch out there educating private boaters on the rules and on the whales. And that's just on the vessel side. There's also been a whole host of activities focusing on the contaminant side and the prey availability side. Everything from large increases in hatchery production to the PFMC adopting measures as part of their package to aid the conservation of southern resident killer whales. Habitat restoration, including Lekwe Island, which is the largest project since Nisqually, two dam removals, lots and lots of investment in fish passage. You guys know all of this, but I just wanted to frame that this is one piece of a very big puzzle, and we need movement in all of those pieces in order to conserve this species or this population. So the legislation was specifically designed to address the commercial whale watching piece. And commercial whale watching vessels make up more than half of the boats in the vicinity of orcas based on Soundwatch data from 2019. And there was a study commissioned by the Port of Vancouver, the same people who produced the 0.6% statistic, that looked at the overall amount of time lost foraging time of SRKW, and they found that commercial whale watch vessels are likely responsible for about a third of that lost foraging time. So really what we wanted to draw your attention to here is that this is not negligible, and it's important that we do something on this issue as the legislature asks us to. One other thing I wanted to call out on the conservation side is that we have this quote is from the Washington State Academy of Sciences report that we commissioned as part of this process. So the effect of vessel presence on animals increases with vessel numbers, particularly for three or more vessels. Oh. So those are some of the conservation sideboards we wanted you to think about. And this, I've expanded on this Venn diagram that I showed you last time to show you some of the considerations that we were trying to bounce around. On the conservation side, we really wanted to limit the number of days and hours that commercial whale watch boats are within a half nautical mile to provide uninterrupted foraging time. And the committee, the science panel, advised that we define every interaction with SRKW as an opportunity to disturb a whale. They told us to be precautionary. So we're thinking about that. Our wildlife diversity staff recommended around 4 hours a day of viewing for a limited number of days and hours per year. They recommended extra caution and extra protections around calves because there are special needs there. And they were really looking to have an 80 to 90% reduction in the amount of hours where whale watching boats are within the vicinity of SRKW. A thing to remember on the conservation side is that the benefit that the whales see is really based on their presence. We can provide opportunity of reduced whale watching vessel presence, but if the whales aren't there, they won't experience that. If the whales are there only during the times that we allow commercial viewing of southern residents, then they won't see much of a difference. So we're really hoping, as part of the adaptive management here, to use whale presence to see how much benefit they're achieving from these rules. On the administration and enforcement side, we worked closely with enforcement throughout this process to make sure that they are giving us feedback on what they can enforce and what might be some on-the-water challenges. They really encouraged us to avoid things that are super complex, involve a lot of tracking with stopwatches, variable rules that they have to check to make sure know what's going on, and they wanted the rules to be straightforward. So they really encouraged us, enforcement really encouraged us to treat the rules like we manage a lot of other things that we manage. And then the industry opportunity side, we did do the economic viability study as well as the small business economic impact statement. Those found that limiting the number of boats, days, and hours allowed with SRKW is unlikely to affect viability. Because there's many other species and we're not planning to restrict viewing of humpbacks, minke, gray whales, even transient killer whales. So there's a lot of opportunity out there, and viewing southern residents makes up less than 10% of their business. So they view southern residents on around 10% of their tours. They did want, though, we listened to industry feedback throughout this process, and they really wanted to preserve more viewing opportunities throughout the year. And they talked a lot about what they called their sentinel role, which is how they influence recreational boaters and participate on the water with influencing other boats' behavior. And so we heard that, and we tried to schedule essentially the opportunity to study that sentinel role so that we can use that information to adaptively manage the rules. As of now, the science wasn't there. The science panel told us to be precautionary and not assume a sentinel role, but we know we need to study this based on the anecdotal stories we've heard, and allowing some opportunity and maybe even making that at times where there might be higher recreational traffic gives us the opportunity to study that. And we also tried to align the opportunities in options A and B with popular seasons for whale watching and times of day when tours take place. So this is from the Small Business Economic Impact Statement. Several of my slides are mostly here for reference for you, so I'm not going to go over this again because we just talked about it on the last slide, but feel free to come back to this if you'd like. I'll focus in, though, on the public comment themes. So these are the same themes, essentially, that we talked about last time. The numbers have just increased. You can see that there's quite a lot of folks, over 4,000 at the end of the day, 315 individual comments, plus several letters, petitions that included multiples that support the rules. Quite a lot of comments supporting option A, particularly option A as filed, and quite a few comments that supported option A with additional restrictions. And that's a package of restrictions that I'll focus in on in a slide down the road. On the other side, we had around 213 comments that opposed both options A and B. There was a lot of discussion in those comments about the positive value of commercial whale watching. And there was another counter proposal there that's also in that same slide, the chart that I'll show you later. And we had a lot of comments on prey availability being an important variable, which is why I wanted to pause to talk about several of the things that we are doing on the prey availability side and why we have this focus on commercial whale watching. And again, all of these things from the last slides were in our minds as we were responding to these comments, and hopefully the responses to comments are helpful in your consideration as well. We did have some more intergovernmental comments since the last time we talked. You heard from Mayor Will Hall at your meeting, who also promoted the modified version of option A. The Samish Indian Nation also wrote a letter to that end, and the port of Friday Harbor supported the no-go zone when SRKWR presence and incentivizing quieter vessels. Again, we have some recommended adjustments. Those were in your package from last time. We've proposed the recommended adjustment to make option A that conceptualized version of daily viewing for the 3 months, but you do have the option of doing that or not, keeping option A as filed, or really the whole realm of whatever you would like there. So I want to pause here. These are the rules that are in both packages. So we've got some general, we have the geographic restriction for the closure on the west side of San Juan Island. We have rules specific to human-powered vessels like kayaks, and we have compliance and reporting pieces, as well as the civil infractions that we're adding on top of the criminal and civil violations defined elsewhere. So I wanted to pause here to see if there is interest in going into more depth on any of these. Otherwise, I can skip ahead to the options A and B, and we can focus more in on those days and hours pieces. So I'll pause if you would like.
So I have a quick question. Rules for license holders. So is that who are you referring to here? Is this the, you know, it says rules for license holders. Which license holders?
This is for commercial whale watching license holders.
But right now, this only applies. This applies to not only license holders, but to all boaters in general, right? Pretty much the general, the geographic restrictions. These are not limited to the whale watching industry, right?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner. So that's a good question. There are rules that apply to all boats, and we have referenced those in that general section. Those rules are that all boats need to stay 300 yards away, 400 front and back from southern resident orcas. There's a speed limit of 7 knots within a half nautical mile. And the other piece is that the no-go zone on the west side of San Juan Island exists for all boats, but it's voluntary currently. These rules would be specifically defining what commercial whale watch vessels who get the license can't do.
Yes. Okay. And human-powered vessels. So then the proposed rules touch on that. We didn't, as I recall, there wasn't a lot of comment in open public comment or in the public comment section concerning the human powered vessels. At least I don't recall much comment on that. It was focused on the commercial whale watching, right? Is that?
Yes. Thank you for the question, Commissioner. The majority of comments, almost all of them, did focus on motorized commercial whale watching. A couple comments came in on non-motorized or human-powered, which mostly we're talking about kayaks here. And those mostly focused on thinking about the definition of commercial whale watching. Some folks in that community don't believe that kayaks should be considered commercial whale watching, but that's a little out of the scope of this rulemaking because it was defined as such in the legislation. And also just having separate rules, not treating those kayaks as though they are motorized vessels, was the other main theme of those comments.
Okay. And then one last question, if I might, on the penalties. You know, we did hear some, I recall some testimony. People thought that a $500 civil fine was, you know, not enough, that it needed to be higher. And so I guess the question is do we have, do we have the statutory authority, we being the commission, to adopt rules that call for a higher civil fine than $500, or is that something that needs to be changed by statute? Maybe that's a question for Nate.
Well, thanks, Commissioner. just real quick on the human powered vessels, that's all within the realm of commercial whale watch via kayaks. So just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. The
penalty question and the authority to increase the civil infraction. I'm hoping either Joe Pinesco or Amy Dona could add some specificity there.
Yeah, so Amy is on. Amy, or I would defer to Amy as a lead advisor on this if she is able to jump in on that one.
Yes. Can you all hear me? I just
took
off
now.
My mute. Great.
Yep.
So as indicated on the slide, there are some established penalties under the RCWs. And the civil infractions that are referred to are set forth in RCW 784, which defines natural resource infractions. And those are defined by statute, and the commission does not have authority to deviate from the statute in that area.
That answer your question?
Yeah, I was just going to say thank you. I was on mute, but no need for the commission to belabor whether to increase the fine since we don't have the authority to do that. So that's useful. Thank you.
Commissioner McIsaac, you have your hand up, and then I have a question as well for Dr. Julie.
Yes, thank you. My question is a follow-up on the human-powered vessels question of Commissioner Kehoe's. So this applies to license holders. So we're going to require some human-powered vessels to have a license for whale watching. This question is going to get to who is the commercial whale watching kayaker and who is a private kayaker. If there's a whale watching kayak group that is a tour guide of 10 other vessels, are those 10 other vessels required to be licensed, or are they subject to the license of the tour guide, so to speak? And any other non-group kayaker is not required to have a license, just like a private skiff, motored skiff, is not required to have a license. Do I have that right?
Commissioner McIsaac, this is Nate. Yes, you do. The businesses that are offering expeditions on kayaks to go out and see natural history and explore, those will be required to have a commercial whale watch license. Other kayakers will not.
Okay, and if you get into a situation where there is a I'm going to call it an eco tour or something that's not a whale watch specialist kayak group. They're out to see the birds, to see the sea otters, and the scenery. And but they're not advertising necessarily for whale watching. Here comes the whales. Is that group considered to be now private vessels, or I presume, or not?
Yeah, the statutes define commercial whale watching, and we've added in, I believe, some additional rules in your packet that help explain that behavior. So in the instance of someone that's not advertising viewing of whales, but then all of a sudden whales are present, I think that's something that probably have some enforcement discretion there. But Julie, you've kind of walked through those different what-if scenarios. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Yes, and thanks, Commissioner. So you're completely correct that private kayaks are not subject to the license and individual kayaks are not subject to the license. It's the company. And commercial whale watching is defined generally as taking or offering to take people to go see marine mammals for a fee. So there's a couple pieces there to the definition of whether a kayak company is a commercial whale watching company. And our enforcement has really drawn the distinction of, are they advertising that you're going to see whales on the tour? Are they advertising that this is an advantage of going on a tour with this group and going to places where they are hoping or expecting to see whales? And then also the second piece is the behavior piece. So if whales come upon the group, or if the group comes upon whales, are they stopping and taking pictures and fussing about the whales, or are they maintaining the proper distances and then moving along their way? So the behavior and the offering and advertising are the two pieces of what defines a kayak company as a commercial whale watching or not.
Okay, I'll have a bit more on private if we have time a little bit later. Thank you.
And I'll hold my question until later as well.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chair and Commissioners. I will move on if you'd like. We're hoping that maybe this is a package that you'll feel more comfortable drawing up for the motion on Friday, and then we can focus in with the rest of your time today on the specific pieces of the days and hours. So I'll skip ahead to that unless there's any other questions on these pieces. Okay. All right. So here are options A and B. I have this a couple ways. I focused on the calendar, which is this next slide here. Last time we met, so this shows the limit of 3 boats in yellow for certain days, July through September in option A, that same amount in option B, but adding those blue days, weekends with 1 boat limit. On the weekends and 2-month shoulder seasons on either side of those 3 months, those are the differences between A and B. And we've also proposed, you have the option, and we put in the staff recommended adjustments, converting A to daily viewing, but that's an option. Another option would be to keep option A as filed. And of course, there were quite a lot of comments that supported keeping option A as filed. And I'll go to this, which is the verbal or the text-based description of the differences between A and B. And here, I'm, again, happy to answer questions if you would like, or I can move to my last slide that I wanted to focus your attention on, which is what were those differences in the public comment and how do they relate in the bigger picture to options A and B? All right. I'll go there and then we can come back to this slide, of course, as much as you want. So here we have option A in blue and option B in blue in the center. You've got the two bookends, and we did receive comments essentially for both of these. On one end, a lot of folks want to suspend commercial viewing of southern residents until such a time that the population recovers. And that's a 2.3% increase per year. The task force report says 10 whales in 10 years would be a good population recovery goal or indicator that we're on the right track for the population recovery. You have the status quo where there's unlimited in a lot of these variables, but there's some voluntary reductions that the industry has made in how they organize themselves around viewing southern resident killer whales. And then I've also put on here 2 advisory committee proposals. They worked towards a compromise, and these were 2 versions of as close to compromise as they could get. That's proposal L and J. And then, but I want to really focus in on the multiple public comments. You can see 2 rows there, and I'll go through those briefly. You have the one to the left of option A says that's essentially folks saying they support option A. They'd like to reduce the number of boats from 3 to 1 during those 3 months, July through September. They would like to call out low visibility conditions as another condition in which viewing it closer than a half nautical mile is not permitted. And I believe that they would also like direct reporting to WDFW when a commercial whale watch boat comes across a southern resident killer whale. The reason we did not include that in the current draft of the rules is that we emphasize the reporting to the whale report alert system in real time. That system can immediately use that information to inform ferries and tankers and other ships so that they can divert their course and avoid affecting the whales. And we're hoping eventually that our enforcement officers will get access to that same system. So our enforcement officers would get access to the real-time information that's in that system without requiring a separate phone call from the operators to DFW. On the others, and I wanted to also emphasize on this side that you heard public comments that were really emphasizing that option A modified to one boat would better align us with potentially aligning with Canada, who have currently stopped viewing of Southern residents. They put a 400 meter restriction in place and they have a voluntary, they have an agreement with whale watch companies to not view Southern residents in those BC waters. On the other side, we have multiple public comments, a lot of these coming from folks in the industry that would like to see a year-round, everyday viewing opportunity, unrestricted in hours, but a 45-minute time limit in the vicinity and a limit of 5 boats with any one group of Southern resident killer whales. And they'd like to see that closure on the west side of San Juan Island only be when whales are present. And that one, the reason that wasn't included in our proposal is that we thought it would be a pretty big enforcement challenge and administrative challenge to communicate that and then enforce that based on whale presence or not. So those are the primary differences. And this is kind of the spectrum of options that we heard in public comments compared to what you have before you as proposals A and B. I'm happy to answer questions, and otherwise it's up to you guys to have your conversation.
Mr. McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question has to do with a previously stated goal of an 80 to 90% reduction in noise that I presume is an 80 to 90% reduction in the 56% of the noise that comes from commercial whale watchers boats in a zone. So on the far left, I see all these zeros, and I would presume that that's 100% reduction. What about all the rest of these? And in terms of, do they all meet 80 to 90%? Are they feathered in here? But some of them don't make even 80%. And on the status quo in this voluntary corner on the right-hand side, this is 80 to 90% reduction from the pre-volunteer time era, or is it 89%? Percent from this status quo, which includes voluntary?
That's a great question, Commissioner. So the 80 to 90% idea comes from looking at daylight foraging hour opportunity and reducing the amount of time that commercial whale watch vessels are within a half nautical mile to provide more uninterrupted foraging time. And options A and B both meet that objective. Of course, as you mentioned, the suspend option goes the whole way to a 100% reduction. And I believe that the multiple public comments, the version of option A that just gets a little tighter on the number of boats is essentially the same number of daylight hours. So all of those meet that objective. On the reduction from status quo side, we looked at status quo as the legislation being passed in 2019, spring of 2019, voluntary reductions had started before then, and the industry really wanted to draw our attention to that they voluntarily started to reduce. But we looked at the 2019 data and the 2018 data and said we need to reduce from that point because that is what the legislation was directing us to do. So it includes some degree of those voluntary reductions, but no, having unlimited viewing or year-round, no limits on hours of day viewing would not get us to an 80 to 90% reduction in viewing opportunity within a half nautical mile.
So if we're debating in our minds the number of boats being one or three, or the shoulder season or not, or the difference between A and B, you're kind of saying that you don't have the quantitative precision here to distinguish between those, or do you?
Thank you, Commissioner. That's another good question. And hopefully I'm getting some more staff input on the side here. I think that we are fairly confident that A provides more reduction overall, particularly A as filed. It's fewer hours and it's fewer months of the year, which means if the whales come back during those other months, they're guaranteed that uninterrupted foraging time, uninterrupted from commercial whale watch vessels, of course. And both A and B provide that 80 to 90% reduction. The as filed is more. So the A with the daily viewing, we think also meets that 80 to 90% target. And we were comfortable with either of those. And the number of boats piece of what you were mentioning, three, we believe more than three, we're getting more impacts after that. And so three was really the highest we were comfortable going. Below three, of course, there haven't been studies to differentiate with less than three boats, but you have to remember as well that there are other boats in the vicinity that we're not regulating through this process. So the total number of boats is likely to be over three, even if we've limited the commercial whale watching boats to three. So that is a consideration as well.
Commissioner Graybill, please.
Thank you, Chair. Currently, how many commercial operators are there? When we talk about reducing viewing to, say, three boats at a time, how many are there that would like to have the opportunity to view these whales?
I'm going to give you the off the top of my head number. I have that slide in my slide deck from my last presentation, so we can refer back to that as well. I believe there's 29 commercial whale watching companies in the PWWA, the Whale Watching Association. There are more kayak companies and there's more incidental companies. So I'm seeing around 55 and there's over 100 active commercial whale watching vessels.
All right, thank you. Also, the civil penalties, are they also applied to private vessels or private kayakers that go over the line in terms of these rules and distance and speed?
Thank you, Commissioner. There's a distinction there that these rules apply to commercial whale watch vessels, and so the penalties associated with these rules would only apply to commercial whale watch vessels. However, there's existing legislation that I mentioned that limits the distance to 300 yards on the sides, 400 front and back, and sets that speed limit. And there's a $500 civil penalty associated with private vessels breaking those speed and distance regulations.
All right. Thank you, Julie.
Mr. Anderson, did you have a question?
No, I don't.
Thank you, Jim.
You know, Larry, if I, what Julie just said about the other boats getting tickets out there, when I've been out with our enforcement folks, I've seen a number of them get a ticket because of the distance factor. So they do get fined. Yeah.
Thank you, Ben.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Dave, one moment, please. Commissioner Linville has her hand up, and then we'll get right back to you, if I may.
Don does, too.
Okay.
I'm not sure if this is – so I'm not sure I have – I'm worried I have a stream of consciousness that I'm not sure is if this is the appropriate time. I don't have a specific question, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Do you want me to kind of hold off for a minute, Chair Carpenter?
No, I mean, Molly, if you have some general comments, feel free. And then I see Commissioner McIsaac appears to have his left hand up this time. So.
Okay. So at the last commission meeting when we were being briefed on this, a lot of red flags sort of went up for me all around this. And so I thought I better do a pretty deep dive into the science and what the literature that's been written about this, because I was super, super unknowledgeable on the topic. And so I did. I went in and I read everything. I could have spent days on this now. And what really strikes me on this is the science is super messy. And, you know, all of the papers say this may have an impact or it suggests. And, you know, I mean, that is kind of science, right? It's, you know, causation is pretty hard to prove. And so, you know, that's pretty typical. But we are getting like on the Washington State Academy of Sciences on page 6, it says there remains insufficient evidence to definitively say that vessel presence and noise is harming the SRKW population. And it says in there says that Sound Watch says whale watching vessels are just one of many types of boats on Washington state waters that affect SRKW and likely represent a small fraction of the underwater acoustic and vessel disturbances they encounter. And recreational vessels make up a large portion of the vessels near whales. So what all this sort of brings me to is, we are saying that we are making a decision based on the best available science. And the issue for me is the best available science says we don't know. And so we're going to take the precautionary route, which I am completely in favor of. You have to do that sometimes when you don't know, but I would like to be more clear that the science says we don't know. I don't want the public thinking that there is all this very firm data on any of this. There's a lot of noise, pun intended, I guess, a noise association with this science. And so my concerns are we are sort of pursuing this from the whale watching aspect so that we can say we've done something. And really, I'm concerned that this is actually doing something. My second concern is that it is giving the public someone to point at and say, well, there's the bad guy. So if we, you know, put regulations around the bad guy, then we've done something. And I have real concerns about that. I'm sure that there are some bad apples in the whale watching community. There is in every industry. But I believe those folks that testified the other day that they care about these whales too. And I just have concerns about coming down very specifically on one user group, and sort of pointing a finger. It feels like pointing a finger to me. So the other red flag for me on this whole topic is this, many of these options feel completely unenforceable to me. And I have concerns that we will use up staff time and energy and money on this piece that we don't even know is going to positively impact the SRKWs. And where that money could go to some of the things that we actually know, you know, are going to have a positive impact. And I hate to be the one to, just bring problems to the table, without sort of any solutions, but over and over again in the Washington State Academy of Sciences report, they use the term vessels. The issue is vessels. The fact that we are picking out one group of vessels to put, you know, sideboards around, is bothersome to me. I just don't think that, we are getting the biggest bang for our buck here. In addition to that, we don't even know what those distance regulations have done to either improve or not improve foraging behavior for the SRKWs. And, you know, if we add these restrictions on, when we go back to do the science, to figure out if the distance works, it's going to be very, very hard to tease out, did those distances help anything, or was it these new licensing rules that we put on that made the difference? So, again, sorry for the long string of consciousness, but this is all I've been thinking about for the last how many ever days. And I just think there's a lot of red flags around this. And so, I'd like to have a discussion about, you know, what does look enforceable, or reasonable, and what maybe the language could look like that doesn't make the whale watching industry sort of in the bullseye. And that's it. I promise.
Thank you, Commissioner Linville. Well said. Commissioner McIsaac, and then I'm going to suggest we go to, I guess we're kind of on open commission comments right now, but let's formally go into that phase. Nate, after Commissioner McIsaac, did you want to say something? Feel free when Don's done. Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And mine was not a question. I was prepared to start to enter into some discussion about the challenge from staff of what we might be looking for in terms of twists on motions. So if there's other questions, that I didn't have another question.
Are there any other questions from the commission?
This is Jim Anderson. Can I say something?
You may. Commissioner Anderson, please.
Yeah, responding a little bit to Molly about with regard to a particular group being in the bullseye, I don't think that definitely should be the case. And I frankly find that this is a real awkward, difficult situation. But we do have some charges, some responsibilities that have been directed to us. And we'll have to make some decisions. But I think like hunters and fishers, sometimes conservationists also find themselves in the bullseye with regard to having to have some restrictions. And so it really shouldn't be looked at necessarily like being the bad guy, but it's just that we're in a situation where we've got a very depressed population. And we have to come up with some plans that are as meaningful as possible, and accomplish what we hope to do. I think the key to a lot of this, and we haven't had a lot of discussion, is the kind of adaptive management or means to monitor and evaluate and adapt over time whatever we come up with. And so perhaps there can be some discussion about the adaptive management piece that lets us see how what we do can be monitored, evaluated, and then adapted within the context of the legislation and good science.
Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. Before I forget, I want to go to Nate, and then I'm going to go to
Larry. Can I chime in too?
Let me give Nate a minute. I put him off about four times,
okay, yeah.
Brad, and then we'll go to you and Bob and Don thing. and I see Molly's got her hand up, so this is going to be good. Okay, Mr. Pamplin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will pass. That was just trying to pick up when there was a little bit of a stalled out time. So this is your all's chance to talk. So we're here to support you.
Stalled out. That's a good term. Okay. Commissioner Graybill.
Actually, just a quick comment. You know, we're looking at all these rules. And again, I really, what Molly's talking about really resonates with me too. We've talked about there's a lot of different elements involved in the recovery of these whales, and the first place we're starting, it seems, is with the industry. And I believe that, I may be wrong, but I think that we just experienced a new birth and also a pregnancy. This all occurred without these rules in place. So
are we really going too far now? And again, picking out the industry is what we want to manage, when in fact, who knows why all of a sudden we're seeing some very healthy signs of the recovery of these whales. And again, without our interference with the industry.
Okay, Brad, you're up, and then Commissioner Kehoe, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, right after. Go ahead, Brad, please.
Okay, thanks, Larry. Yeah, you know, again, as you know, I sat through 2 years of these meetings, so I don't want to get into a debate on point by point, because we've listened to a lot of excellent testimony from a lot of people on all sides of the issue. Where I'm going to boil it down to is that these critters are in trouble. And I've been out on the whale boats. I've been on the enforcement boats. Basically from sunup to sundown, there's somebody watching them, from planes, from boats, whatever. I don't view this as a punitive action. It falls under the precautionary, world. But also, I think this is an adaptive. We have an issue that, as Dave said, we do have a birth. That's great, but they're in trouble. I mean, that's the reality. And as the governor said when he kicked off the whole meeting, you know, extinction was not an option. And when you get down into the digits that we're in right now, extinction is hovering its head every so often on the southern residents. So, after, again, listening for days of all of this for 2 years, they need a break. They need a break, and that's not forever. But, you know, as Jim said, in the hunting world, there's restrictions. In the fishing world, there's restrictions. And sometimes you don't have a season because of populations. But it's not forever. So you know, Canada's taken a step, and I think looking at these, business as usual will not be any business, in my estimation, in the future. So I think that's how I come down on all of this. But again, I'm not going to debate back and forth. That's my two cents. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. Commissioner Kehoe, then Molly, you have your hand up, and we'll go to you, and then to Commissioner McIsaac, in that order, if I may.
So, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, first I'm going to start with a quick question. And then I'm going to suggest, I'm going to, throw out my ideas about, options for us ultimately to consider. So my first quick question has to do with, the licensing program. And just wanted to ask staff if they considered or their thoughts about, instead of just having an open license, in other words, an open license would be anybody that applies for a license could get one, as opposed to what we call limited entry. And just so the commissioners that may not be familiar with what that term or the members of the public, limited entry is how many of our fisheries are managed. For example, coastal Dungeness crab, that's a limited. There's a limited number of licenses. The people that own those can sell them, can lease them, but in other words, you're capped at a number. And so I guess my question is to the staff, what are your thoughts about establishing, you know, through this rule, an option to consider or to move forward with a limited entry license program as opposed to just an open license program?
Thanks, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Kehoe.
Let me add one part there, Nate, because Bob made a great point. That also is the limited entry is pretty much applicable to almost all commercial fisheries. Also to Puget Sound and Ocean charter fisheries, it's a limited entry as well.
So. Yes, that is correct. And under the statutes that allow for limited entry, that is all in statute. Mm-hmm. Those were policy calls for the legislature to limit the the amount of commerce for that activity. The statute that we're dealing with right now did not provide that authority to us. What we are able to do is look at the time, place, and manner of the presence of commercial whale watch vessels around southern resident killer whales to achieve that result. And so that's the tack that we've taken here.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess it's something that certainly the commission or the legislature could look at moving forward. The first step, I guess, is to create this license program. Then the next step is to consider whether to make it a limited entry system. So, okay, well, that's good. So if Julie's still there, could she go to the slide with the suite of options? Julie, are you there?
Yes. Let me pull that up for you right now. Here we go. And share screen. Is that working for you?
Yeah, that works. Thank you. So, first of all, Julie, great job. I mean, this really is helpful in kind of taking all this kind of information from all different directions and distilling it into kind of one readable slide. I think it's excellent and a great presentation, not only today, but the other day. And I also want to recognize Commissioner Smith, who did, you know, sit on the task force, sat for hours and hours and hours, and heard all of the back and forth, and was involved in putting this these recommendations to the legislature forward. So, you know, to kind of get at Commissioner Linville and Commissioner Graybill's comments about, hey, we're singling out one sector, you know, it's kind of low-hanging fruit. You know, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but the way I look at it is a lot of people have hashed this over a long period of time. And commissioners, you know, I have some familiarity with the issue with my other job, but I'm certainly no expert. And these guys, these folks on the task force, they've put in, you know, incredible amount of hours over years. And then also, too, we were given – kind of along the lines of what Commissioner Anderson was saying, is we were given a job by the legislature. And the job was unequivocally come up with some sort of licensing program. And, you know, I forget the other mandates, but doing nothing to me is not an option. I mean, so I think we eliminate the status quo from even consideration. I also think that we suspend all whale watching. That wasn't part of the recommendation of the task force, although I know they recommended a moratorium, for a certain number of years, presented to the legislature. The legislature said, no, we don't want to go that direction. So I view us, you know, as working as a team with the legislature, with the governor, and with the task force. So certainly I think we need to consider option A and option B's. I think those should be on the docket for our decision on Friday. But I would also, given the number of comments that we received, I think we should entertain the option A with limiting the number of boats to 3 to 1. I think as far as the idea about limiting number of boats, you know, especially in low visibility and where there's calf pregnant, I just can't see how that's enforceable. I mean, I think a laudable goal, and maybe people could take that on voluntarily, but I don't think that's a doable. So, you know, for me, I think the commission should consider options A and B, and a modified option A with limiting boats, lowering the number of boats from 3 to 1. So that means that we would have 3 options. So that's those are my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. Commissioner Linville, and then Commissioner McIsaac. Commissioner Linville.
I really appreciate what actually both Commissioner Smith and Commissioner Kehoe said, and I feel really remiss in not starting out what I said earlier with, this is an extremely fragile, imperiled population, and I absolutely think that we need to do our very best for them, and I do totally believe, Commissioner Smith, that they need a break. I think the point that I did not make well was that if we are going with best available science, it's vessels that we need to be taking on and not distinguishing among the vessels. However, Commissioner Kehoe reminded me that, yeah, but we've been told that we are addressing whale watching. So I acknowledge that. I liked a lot of what Commissioner Kehoe said about the ideas. I think we need to get something that is enforceable. And so, daylight hours seem enforceable to me. You know, the time of day seems enforceable. Days of the week seem enforceable. And so if we could just get something, since we have to do it, we've been asked to do it, something that is a little bit more streamlined, and that Commissioner McIsaac brought some really, really good questions forward about private folks out there as far as the kayaking goes. And so, I would like that teased out as well in whatever the options are, or at least have some clarity brought around that.
Thank you, Commissioner Linville. Commissioner McIsaac? Commissioner McIsaac?
How about that mute button? Okay. Yeah, let me start by joining Commissioner Kehoe and thanking Commissioner Smith for all the time he spent on the task force. And I'd like to recognize that process in its entirety, but and Commissioner Smith in particular, and not to put him on the spot, but if there is a point here where he feels some sort of amendment to options A and B are worth thinking about between now and Friday, I would ask if he has any thoughts on that. And if not, then on Friday, maybe we could hear from him. He may have just made a pretty strong recommendation, to do something here. Give him a break. We've got this hypothesis that there's not enough food, and, we're doing something about that with regard to our hatchery policy and hatchery production of Chinook. But what do we do about this noise thing? So a thought for me has to do with something a little bit more than just the regulations. So on Friday, we'll have a motion of some sort on exact regulations, but I'm interested in exploring some commission intent that might go along with that. Not as a regulation, but as something that if the commission agrees with some concepts to putting those out that are read right alongside our recommendation or our decision on license. Business. So last time I asked a question about budget priority on this, and the staff said we do have some budget strength in terms of money for monitoring, money for enforcement, and this kind of thing. I asked about research and study design, if there was any twists of A and B that could be used to learn not the Sentinel or the Magnet concept can be quantified in any way. And the answer was we are going to be watching that. We're going to be looking at that. But they didn't say anything about a study design and whether or not a twist of this could help on that. On the matter of private boats, when I asked the question, what about some commission intent that we want to put out there very strongly that we'd like the private vessels who might be thinking about whale watching to do exactly what the commercial whale watchers are being regulated to do? And the answer was, we have an education thing out there, and so I'm going to explore just a little bit more about doing more than just an education thing. And again, it gets back to the possibility on Friday of some sort of a commission statement that goes along with it. So we've got with the license business. So 56% of the local noise around the whales being commercial whale watchers, only 0.6% of the ambient noise, counting the ships and the tankers and the submarines and everything else. But right around the whales, 56%. That means there's 44% coming from somewhere else. And so I presume that's right around the whales, that's the private folks. Kayakers might not make too much noise, but somehow they're involved in all this too. So in terms of doing something here that would get to the private folks, and again, I guess what I'm thinking of is in almost the same manner as the commercial whale watch regulations that might be coming forth, that it's not an enforceable thing. And I mentioned the other day, I'm not talking about people going crabbing or shrimping. I'm talking about, let's go out there and see if we can find a killer whale to look at. It's a closed day for the commercial whale watching folks, but it's not closed for us. So let's go have a look. If you're an eco-tour folk place that did not advertise to go look for killer whales, but there they are. It's one of those days when the commercial guys are closed, you know, what happens in that? And so if there's direction from the commission or a request from the commission that's involved in our education package, but is more than that, maybe it's signage, maybe I don't know what it is, but I think the more that goes out there and people hear this kind of impetus from the commission to do something on the private sector, people will probably do it. I think most people will abide by the intent if they believe it's reasonable. So, to get to my question, where can I go now to read what is already there in the staff material about what is the budget, what is the research, and what is the education system, so I can see whether or not there's any reason to go stronger than whatever we have now as a commission intent, or to try to phrase something. And the limited entry thing might fall in the same category. If we don't have the authority to do that right now, what if the commission felt like that is a good idea and wanted to let the folks in the legislature or other folks know that we've thought about this, and in terms of giving the whales a break from noise, that's something to look into in the future. So my direct question to staff, though, is where do I go to read this stuff that's not a license proposal, but was referred to last time as we've got something going in those areas?
Okay, I got several people. Brad, I see you want to say something, then I'm going to go to Amy, and then I see Molly and Jim have their hand up. So if we can go in that order.
I like Don's idea about a statement. Hats off to our marine enforcement people. I've seen them have to take a lot of aggravation from people and out there that when these cigar boats go flying through, and I've seen it when the enforcement boat, when I've been on it, a pursuit, you know, flying across the water because some of these folks said that you don't have any authority over us, and on and on. But the people that we have out there in enforcement do a great job, and they have great patience. And Don also kind of said, you know, where was I coming down on all of this? I agree with the legislature. I never advocated a total ban. But I think that we have an opportunity in a restricted operation to do some of this good science that needs to be done to find out. And and it was one of the proposals that was just surfaced to have the, our director review this every May 1st, on May 1st each year. So I think we, if we pause, dial back, don't dial off, but dial back and use this time to help with the other, with the non-commercial, industry, and also to do the science on the noise and to see how it is. And I think this will afford us, you know, we always call adaptive management what we do. I think this is a good opportunity to do this, but I think a strongly worded statement. What our enforcement folks always say, and as I think we all know, most of their job is education. And as I said before, sometimes you have to earn a ticket. You know, and I've seen people earn big tickets, you know, up there. But
thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Commissioner Smith. Julie, could you Nikki, could you take the screen down? Then Amy, Molly, and Commissioner Anderson in that order, if I may.
I'm going to punt some things over to Nate as well. But if you want to look at the financial pieces of it, it's in our 21-23 proposed enhancements. There's a suite of items in there that we can re-forward to you. But there's a there's a couple of different pieces in there about what we're going to do with the money. And then there's also the enforcement piece, which is in there as well. So there's that's where the if you want to see like where we're investing. Relative to the research, we couldn't design the process until we are done with sort of coming up with these license rules because we don't know what the parameters are. So that's a to-do and has not yet been done. Relative to working on the education piece. So in Canada, you know, this is a transboundary issue. The Pacific Whale Watch fleet goes back and forth across the Canadian border, right? The Canadians come to America, the Americans go to Canada in a normal time period, not right now because the border's closed, but generally it is a transboundary. The Pacific Whale Watch Association is a transboundary group as well. They have a Canadian president and they have an American president and they work together. So the Canadian, so the Pacific Whale Watch Association has actually committed voluntarily to not watching the southern residents in Canada. And so relative to that, Canada, so that's already happening in Canada now. And what Canada's also done is they have started a pretty broad outreach effort to their boaters about voluntarily not watching, orcas, southern residents. And they're pretty far in front of us in terms of that outreach material. And so we can easily use their materials and partner with them because we've partnered with them on multiple efforts around the southern residents. So I think though we have not yet developed those materials, I think they're very much able to be stolen from our colleagues in Canada. And maybe Julie can speak about what they've already got on the books, but it's a pretty extensive outreach effort that they're doing. And the voluntary efforts that PWWA has already done on the other side of the border speaks to sort of how things can go here as well in terms of you know, that it's already in the protocols essentially for Canada that can then be translated down to the states. And so it's not outside the realm of what's already occurring. Nate, do you want to speak to some of those other pieces, maybe about the enforcement piece?
Thanks, Amy. Yeah, just, you know, we spent internally, we had a work group that involved our licensing staff, our wildlife program diversity staff and enforcement program staff. And that was a big part of it. In fact, some of the proposals that we originally kind of came up with in the summer, just to kind of pull back the curtain, when we brought it to enforcement was like, that's not going to quite work for us on the water. And so we needed to come up with a more pragmatic solution. And that's where you see those days of the week and set times rather than allowing for a certain window of time to be in the presence of whales. It was really, here's times of day that in the end, it will limit the commercial viewing of southern residents to just 4 hours a day, 20 hours of allowing them not to have the potential for interaction or disturbance because of the presence of commercial whale watch vessels. So we think that, you know, I know there was raised a couple times on the enforcement side of this. We had folks pretty engaged all along, and that was a critical part. You know, once we met the kind of the conservation objective, as Julie indicated, what are those other elements that you try to accommodate as you craft rules? And certainly enforceability was one of those components.
Thank you, Nate. Folks, we have 15 minutes left on this call. Molly, have your hand up and want to speak, and then we'll go? No, you don't? Okay. Commissioner Anderson, then, please.
Very brief, I support the recommendations for a statement that picks up the different issues or ideas that Commissioner McIsaac talked about. You know, I think I am particularly interested in how an adaptive management piece is factored in. What I heard from Deputy Director Windrope is that some of that is gets packaged once some decisions are made, but I just want to be on record that I think that's absolutely critical, because that's the kind of thing that allows us to move from maybe mushy to less mushy in terms of the science, and so that we have a better handle on this going forward.
Anyone else? Oh, there, Commissioner Lindell, then Commissioner Keogh, please.
Jim made a question pop into my head. Is there already adaptive management sort of protocols underway for the distance, the 300 feet and 400 before and behind?
Thank you, Commissioner. So there's current research that's shore-based monitoring that we've been partnering with a group to do. And so that process has started, and we're working on refining that work plan to include both the monitoring of all vessels and then also to help us tease out the commercial whale watching piece. So that is part of the overall adaptive management strategy. I believe that we have a lot of ideas around how we would adaptively manage and what we need to measure and track. And it's really about the plugging in the pieces of what are we doing so that we can then fine tune all of those details. But we've been having a lot of conversations about methods and partners and things along those lines.
Commissioner Keogh, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm ready to make a motion about options to consider. I don't know if this is the time or if you have some comments that you would like to make.
I'm at a disadvantage in some ways.
Was that noticed?
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Was that noticed for this meeting?
I spent a big part of my life out in this area, and I've seen a lot, observed a lot, and I have too much to say. Some good, maybe some not quite so good, but I agree with the direction we're going. We have to do something for these majestic critters, and I'm not at a place yet where I've really got my arms around. I think there's been some great comments and suggestions today by all staff and my colleagues on the commission. I just kind of want to pull it together between now and Friday and try and focus on the best of the best. And I hope I can contribute more on Friday than I've been able to today. It's kind of a struggle, Bob. You and I have talked about it. I've been out there, 3 months a year for 60 years, and I see a lot of things. I have some definite concerns, because I've seen the whale watch industry grow out there. I know some of those people personally, and they're really caring people, and they get the big picture, and they want to do the right thing. There may be some that aren't, but fortunately I don't know them. But the piece that I'm as much concerned about that we're not talking about in this arena is the prey. And I know we've done this, and I know we've done that, and I know we're trying to deal with a hatchery reform piece. But all the way the food chain out in that area in Harrell Strait, as it was 50, 60 years ago, with thousands of tons of herring along the shoreline and needlefish. And I mean, I've had herring that I brought in the boat for bait, and they've they're coughing up needlefish, 5-6 inch needlefish. None of that's there anymore. So therein lies is the 4-H piece that I'm concerned about, but that's a different issue. So I'm on board with what we need to do. I just don't know. I don't have more to say today, Bob, but thanks for the question.
Okay. So I don't know. I see the Attorney General has appeared. So I was thinking about making a motion to add an option to consider for the Friday's meeting on action.
I see Nate's got his hand up. I guess the only thing I would say we are short two commissioners. Nate, go ahead, and then we'll go to Joe, if I may.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Kehoe. Appreciate kind of where you're at with wanting to put forward some concepts. I guess what I would propose is for the commissioners not to necessarily make a motion now. The decision is scheduled for December 18th. We're going to develop some motion language in your summary sheet. And so certainly, like, for instance, one would be a motion for the commission to pass option B as presented by staff. One would be option A as presented by staff. And then it's kind of like, what are some other elements you would like for us to consider to try to package in, just to help provide that language of how you may want to modify either option A or option B. So that's where I would recommend is if you let us know, like, you know, hey, we'd like to look at parameter X or parameter Y, we can do that and then include that as a possible motion or a possible amendment to a motion.
Okay. Yeah. So thanks, Nate. Well, I mean, the reason I'm bringing it up is I mentioned the possibility of, of a third option, and that's option A with one vote. But I haven't heard any other commissioners support that. So I don't know how we kind of, move forward. You've heard a lot today. I'm just trying to streamline it and, get us to a point where we can make a decision on Friday. And so that staff is not kind of worrying, okay, well, what, maybe we didn't hear everything. So that's just however we go about it doesn't matter to me. I'm just trying to, kind of march on a path forward for consideration. So.
Joe Panesco, and then yeah, I think Commissioner Anderson had and Amy.
Yeah, thanks. Just to follow up, I would tend to discourage any of the commissioners from considering a formal motion at today's meeting, even if it is to try to help scope the range. I think any one of you are free, as Commissioner Kehoe is just doing, is to suggest a potential variation. And if staff could have that, especially if it's not the significant change as the one Commissioner Kehoe just mentioned, maybe A with just one vote, is have that as an option. And if any one of the commissioners actually wishes to pursue that formally as an amendment to the considerations in front of the commission for vote on Friday, then they could do that. So if any commissioners, strongly wish the full commission to be able to consider any of those alternatives within the two end sideboards, if you raise it now to staff, then I think that would be sufficient. Nate, does that work with your understanding in terms of staff timeline and commitments? Thanks.
Okay, I see. First of all, Jim Anderson, do you want to speak before we wrap up? Okay.
No.
I've got Amy and then Molly, you're going to wrap up. You'll be the last one unless there's somebody else has a crisis.
Well, I was going to follow up, from Commissioner Kehoe and just sort of give back sort of some of the things maybe that we've heard, that we would, explore, and maybe that would be useful for us just to reflect back to you what we heard, if that's a good step.
Yes.
Yeah. So in the language that we could bring back to you all would be statement around making sure that we are inclusive of voluntary actions and concrete ways that other vessels could participate in protecting the Southern residents. A statement around the importance of adaptive management and the commitment of the agency to continue seeking investments for adaptive management, and a report back to either this commission or the director on perhaps every 2 year or every year cycle, some sort of report out on how, what we're learning from the adaptive management information that we're gathering. A piece about enforcement and the importance of enforcement and how enforcement is also going to be able to share what they're learning about what works and what doesn't, and that the adaptive management would be inclusive of understanding how that's going. A look at something like option A with only one boat, and maybe sort of have that as a tier of like, here's another option. And that's what I have got. That's what I got.
Okay, I have one. I have one question or comment. I guess I'll pass it off to Nate for Amy. You probably know too. I know the industry that I was part of for 40 years and have been out of now for almost 4 years has been very active in educating recreational boaters about southern resident killer whales for near a decade under B WhaleWise, and at the Seattle Boat Show, which used to be the biggest one on the West Coast, they always had booths. Handing out information sheets. So I'm not singling them out, but could we hear on Friday what other groups, what proactive groups like the NMTA and others have perhaps done and or what they might agree to participate in the future? I think that would be helpful when we're talking about other user groups, other sectors.
That sounds good, Mr. Chair. And I guess I think that in my mind, I probably separate this out just a little bit, almost similar to the commission motion back in August on the budget, where there was action taken on the budget proposals to move that kind of staff work forward. And then in addition, here was another statement on around some of the other elements, some of the other threats to killer whales or other outreach work and things like that, that wouldn't be necessarily incorporated into rule package, but provides direction to staff as well as kind of messaging to the broader conservation community and the Whale Watch Association or in the industry about where we're headed next.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I know Amy, you and Brad, one of the other participants in the ORCA work group was George Harrison, who runs the association I speak of, and I know he's been most dedicated in this issue. Okay, Molly, you got the tail end of it.
Love having the last word. That never happens. Nate mostly answered my question, which was, can we have the rulemaking package and then some sort of language, best practices type of language? Mm-hmm. And so I really support that. I support the lineup that Amy described. I would... As far as direction, in the motion, as far as enforcement goes, I would want to sort of place things like vessels only viewing the whales on the open days for 15 minutes. I would rather place that type of thing in the best practices category versus the actual rulemaking, just because I think that would, you know, I don't want our enforcement officers to have to referee, you know, with a stopwatch, that type of thing. So I think there's some things that, you know, could go in best practices and then the more, enforceable things should go in the rulemaking, which to me is hours and days and that sort of thing that are, where they don't have a lot of gray area around them.
Okay, good. Thank you, Commissioner Linville. Anyone else? It's been a good discussion. Thank you, everyone, staff and commissioners. Brad, have a good one. All of you have a good one. Jolt, I'm going to move to adjourn the special meeting. It's now 4:59 p.m. on the 15th of December, 2020. Be safe. Talk to you all on Friday.
Thank you.
You bet.